Coming up on today's show...
If you're hard on yourself, if you're incredibly self-critical, if you feel like you're never doing enough, and this town will make you feel like that, it's okay. You have permission to not be 150% every damn day.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on location in Nashville, my guest is a singer, songwriter, producer who has written songs for some of the biggest names in country music, ranging from Leanne Rimes to Faith Hill, Alan Jackson, Thompson Square, John Rich, Lee Bryce, Jody Messina, and Sam Hunt. Not only is she headed to Denmark this September to perform as part of Nashville Nights International, but under that same umbrella, she will return to her home country of Australia to perform in October. She capped off 2024 with her second cut being her own publisher, going number one on SiriusXM's The Highway and over 30 million streams. You've been hearing a song she wrote called Fight With The Sky. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Kylie Sackley.
Hi, I'm so happy to be here, friend.
It's great to have you here. Thank you so much for taking time out of your nutty schedule to sit and talk with me today.
You're so welcome.
Let's get started by having you share all about the song that was just playing called Fight With The Sky, especially since I was talking over it and the audience couldn't hear the lyrics. What is the song about? Who did you write it with? What's the current state of that song?
Yeah, so it's actually a brand new song I wrote a couple of weeks ago. It's an idea I've had in my phone for a couple of years. I lost a very good friend a couple of years ago to suicide. His name was Kyle Jacobs. He was a beautiful, talented songwriter and producer in Nashville. And back when I lost him, I just was thinking, like, I'm so mad. I'm mad at God. I'm mad at, you know, everything. And so I had this title, Fight With The Sky. I wrote it with Frank Romano and Maddie Conser, who's a new up-and-coming artist in Nashville. She's wonderful. And the song took on a different turn for me with the state of the world right now. And it's just, there's so many people suffering and there's, you know, so much chaos. And so we turned it into more of focusing on that. That feeling of being human and be asking God why, like, what's happening?
But I'm wondering, you said that you had the idea in your phone for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So how does that feel when it's something so personal and you decide to pivot and say, this was in my phone from a couple of years ago when I lost my friend to suicide, but now with the state of the world and inviting other co-writers into it instead of doing it as a solo write, just walk us through that, because it's something very personal that now becomes a different type of personal.
Yeah. Well, it's always scary. I'm a huge title person. So it's always scary to throw out the ideas that are extremely personal to me. But I also know that's part of trusting a room and taking a swing, right? And yes, it was about suicide in my mind. But over time, it morphed into something way more global and that I think everyone can relate to and maybe find some peace and healing in it. So
you're reading my mind, because I was thinking it opens up the relatability factor. How many people know someone that committed suicide versus how many people are going to raise their fist and look up in the air and fight with the sky about something? And maybe it's the state of the world. Maybe it's some huge battle that they're fighting that isn't on the same level, but to them, this is worth fighting with the sky. So I love that you did kind of say, this is going to actually appeal to a wider audience.
Thank you. I've been doing this for 22 years, so I want my songs to reach as many people as possible when I write them. So I sort of have to take my own personal stuff out of it for the sake of the song and the reach and the connectability for other people, because I really believe this song people are going to relate to. They're going to feel not alone, maybe even heal, you know. So I just think it's important to put these messages in the world. I'm a songwriter. I have a gift. I don't want every song to be about girls and trucks and tailgates. I want to say something more.
So is that you performing the version that we just played? Has it been cut by anyone? Where does it stand?
No. So it's early days. So the Maddie Consur sang the demo. She's incredible. She plays downtown a lot, and she's working on building her stuff up to shop record deals and all of that. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those. Just you put it out in the world at some point and, you know, hope people love it.
There are going to be lots of Kylie Sackley family members, friends, fans, followers coming to this episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. By the way, hello to all of you people. Welcome. Thank you for joining us. And do please, by all means, check out other episodes of the show. But Kylie, in my more than 11 years of doing this show, I've been fortunate to get listeners from 166 countries around the world. So for those folks just getting introduced to you, I mentioned in the intro your home country of Australia. Take us back to before you moved to the U.S., meaning the background of your music career, the foundation.
Yeah. I grew up in a camping family. We're in a very remote area of Australia, and we would drive 12 hours to areas to camp and go fishing and, you know, have family holiday stuff. And my parents always heard me singing along to Alan Jackson and Garth Brooks. They were my jam. And a country music competition came to my tiny little one-horse town. Mm. And my mom was like, I really think you should give it a go. So I went in it. I wore my denim A-line skirt, my Garth Brooks two-tone country shirt, and I sang the cowboy song, which you should go back and reference sometime, because a 11-year-old, 12-year-old singing that song is interesting. But it lit my fire. I won that competition. Mm. Side note, there was very little competition in the competition. So, but I won that and I caught the bug for the talent quest scene in Australia. So my wonderful parents would take me all over Australia for state championships.
Talent Quest is a brand?
No, like the competition scene for music.
Oh,
it's
okay.
Not just
okay.
Country. Yeah, I think it was, a lot of it was country actually. But yeah, there's festivals and competitions that go down all over Australia.
And you were quote unquote just singing. You weren't playing guitar. You weren't songwriting yet.
Actually, I started writing poems when I was 8. And, you know, by the time I was 10, I was pretty much making them songs before I had played guitar. I sort of rose up through the talent quest scene. I won a competition called Toyota Star Maker, which Keith Urban won not too long before me. It's basically the American Idol of country music in Australia. Mm. So it's a highly coveted award. And with that, I won a year of festival placements, like playing to 20,000, 40,000 people at festivals. I won a car for a year. I toured and I won a record deal as well.
Wow.
So I put out a single in that year that went top 4.
Wow.
And the year after, the Golden Guitars in Australia are the CMA Awards here. Mm-hmm. And so I think they call it CMA Horizon Award here. Best New Talent. Mm-hmm. I won Star Maker when I was 18, won Golden Guitar Best New Talent when I was 19. 2 days later, got on a plane to Nashville to come write for my first record because I was hellbent on being an artist. Got to Nashville. Did not realize that you could have a whole career in songwriting. I'm quite an introvert. I really don't crave the spotlight and the front woman thing. And I figured out really quickly that this could be a full-time profession for me. And songwriting has, till the day I die, my first and number one passion.
Let me jump in with a couple questions here because I'm kind of confused. So you win at the age of 19 and 2 days later you go to Nashville just of your own choosing or because that was part of the package? Or I don't understand. I mean, that's a long way to go to just win some competition. And I don't mean to belittle it, but to win something in Australia and decide now I'm going to go to Nashville and songwrite.
Yeah.
Am I missing something?
I mean, the plan was to songwrite for my first record.
Okay.
So I came over for 6 weeks, extended for 10 because, I mean, this town is incredible. Every Music Row, every house is a publishing house, a studio, you know, it's just the energy in this town is incredible. So yes, the intention was to write for my first record.
I see.
Went back to Australia, toured with basically the Alan Jackson of Australia.
Wow.
Planned a second trip to Nashville to come back, do some writing. Was still in the artist mentality for all of that.
Mm.
Went back from the second trip. So I was, I had just turned 20 and I told my parents I want to move to Nashville.
The tour that you did with the Australian version of Alan Jackson, was that because of the success that you were having? Was that a contest? How did you get, I mean, that still sounds like a terrific opportunity for someone that was very early into all of this.
Yeah. So, I mean, when I won Star Maker, I mean, I was kind of put on tour, you know, we had an agent, I was put to work, I was thrown in the deep end.
Okay.
And it was a hell of a way to cut your teeth.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, so let's pick up where you were starting to leave off and talk about making the huge move to America. There are lots and lots and lots of people who up and leave wherever in the States they are from, and they pack their musical dreams and set down in Nashville to try to make a go of it. But my gosh, as I started to say before, all the way from Australia, just tell us about that move, because as I said before, it bears repeating, you're halfway around the world. And yes, Nashville, you know, someone down in Australia could absolutely have it on the radar as that's the country music capital. That's where I got to be. But so you're starting to say you went to your parents and said, now that I've been there a couple times, like, I want to move there.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, also, I wanted to take my music to the world. And it's a lot harder to do in Australia from Australia. So I was just like, I need to be in it. I need to be on the street here. It wasn't a difficult decision for me. Looking back, it was obviously pretty horrific. And although my family have always known I was a dreamer and a go-getter, so I don't know if it was that shocking to them. I'm the baby of four girls. Mum and dad are still together. So it's difficult to have that conversation and go, yeah, I want to take my music to the world and I need to do that in Nashville. But I have an incredibly supportive family who were like, baby girl, go get it. And, you know, I was 20 and 3 months old when I moved over here.
I'm wondering, you know, at that age, if there's some degree of naivety.
100%.
And if that's a good thing or a bad thing, because the good part about it is what helps you decide, yeah, I'm really going to go. The bad part is you don't know what you don't know. It's like, this is a really big thing, like changing continents. That's, and no more of the supportive family right around you, physically around you.
Yeah, but if you don't take your swing, how would you ever know? You
trust
know?
Me, I moved 1,300 miles away without a job to go to.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I support you.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I mean, every time I go back to visit and come back, I mean, getting mom to let go of me at the airport is just really hard and sad. But they know I'm living my passion. And I don't know that you could want anything more for your kid. And they got that.
I feel like you were about to say, every time I come back here, I'm reminded that this is where I'm meant to be.
1,000%. 1,000%. Yeah. And so basically, to drop back into that, I came the first year, I was still in artist mentality a little bit. And then I really got into the groove. I got a publishing deal within 3 months. I had two hit singles within the first three years of my publishing deal.
Okay, let's leave the audience in suspense because I have a question later that's going to pick us back up where you were. But wow, this is fascinating. But I also like to do this background setting again for those people who are just being introduced to you for the first time so that they know what everything that you've accomplished was built off of. you know, because there are people that do wake up one day and say, I'm going to go to Nashville. And it's like, wait a minute, what have you even done musically? So you had done plenty.
Yeah.
Folks, I hope you enjoy the On Location interviews that I bring you from time to time, like this one with Kylie Sackley while I'm in Nashville. There was one from January when I was in Orlando because I was speaking at PodFest Multimedia Expo, and then there were a bunch from Anaheim, California at the NAMM show in late January. Being out on the road gives me the hope, the chance, that I can meet folks who listen to this show and say a personal thank you. The next chance for that comes up early next month in Miami Beach. I will be speaking at the Business Show / B2B Marketing Expo, which takes place May 7 and 8, and it is free to attend. I will also have a booth there for Now Hear This, my PR agency. Get all the information from b2bmarketingexpo.us, and I will hope to see you there. And then continue listening to the podcast, read the weekly e-newsletter, and or follow the at Now Hear This Entertainment Instagram account as I continue to announce more dates and cities where hopefully we can chat in person. Kylie, as the audience can tell from the intro and all the big name artists who have cut songs that you've written, you are one busy, busy songwriter, but you do get out and perform. I'm pretty sure you've been at the Key West Songwriters Festival, plus another one up in Northeast Florida called Ruscaloosa. Are those kind of vacations for you and one of those just what the doctor ordered breaks from all the craziness of being a Nashville songwriter? Or is it just same thing, different location, meaning that even though you're out of state, you just can't turn that darn songwriter brain off?
I mean, it's different when I'm performing because I switch out of writer mode and into, okay, front woman mode. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can never really switch that off. And I'm thankful for it. Like, no matter where you go, you know.
You're thankful for not being able to turn the songwriter brain off?
Yeah.
Because it results in the list of cuts that...
Yeah, and because ideas and really incredible ideas, sometimes it's like your antenna's up. I think Rick Rubin says this, you just have to have your antenna up, and like it, sometimes they just come to you, but you have to be clear and ready to hear those special ideas. So yeah, and because I am an ideas girl, oh, I'm writing them down every 2 seconds. I'll see someone say something on the street and I'm like, or I'll just like witness someone having an interaction and it makes me think of something. And wow. I'm like, that feels like a really human thing I could write.
Wow. And similarly, and I brought this up last week on my conversation with Brandon Bing, when you're on stage in a writer's round, and let's face it, if you're at the Key West Songwriters Festival, you're in a writer's round. You are switching into Kylie Sackley artist mode, but at the same time, the innate songwriter in you is listening to the others in your round and going, what are they writing these days? I don't know these people. So now you're getting exposed to people that aren't the folks that you're seeing here regularly.
Oh, yeah. And those festivals are a wonderful opportunity to make connections, to meet new people, to meet new co-writers. I've actually played 18 Key Wests. I started in 2002, the first year I visited when I was 19, it was 2002, and I moved in 2003, and I had done my first Key West in the May of 2002,
wow.
Back when it was 12 people, Bob DePiro, Rivers Rutherford, Jeffrey Steele, Brett James, I mean.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, and I was just this 19-year-old at the time, had like black hair with a pink streak. I was trying to be like punky looking and cool, and I had no business being there, but my publisher was like, you should come to this. We should, you know. And I wound up meeting my BMI person there and signing with BMI years ago. And but Key West has grown into a much bigger monster.
Right,
yeah.
Right. That was back in a time when you didn't know any better and people would walk up to you and say, hey, how you doing? You're like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And now it's like, hey, what's up?
Yeah. And it's also back to the, like, the whole thing about moving over here. Yeah, I was fearless.
Mm-hmm.
Now, had I waited till I was 42 to move to Nashville, I wouldn't have done it. I would have been too established in Australia. I might have had a family, all of that. I'm so thankful I took the leap.
Let the record show that I am not the one that asked you to reveal your age. You were doing the math along the way. So,
honey, I've never been better. I love 42.
Speaking of going to play live at festivals, wow, let's hear first about what you have on the calendar for September over in Denmark.
Oh my God, we're going to Denmark. Our beautiful friend Blue Foley with Nashville Nights Denmark is taking us. We are playing, I think it's 11, 12, 13 of September. I don't know how to pronounce the name of the town perfectly, but I will learn before I get there. but I've never traveled to that side of the pond because if I'm going anywhere, I'm going home to Australia to visit the family. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm so freaking excited. I hear the Denmark crowds are incredible. They love songwriters. They love country music. And there's such a fun crew coming.
Yeah, so you can be... In that, again, we keep coming back to the same theme of there's going to be some degree of, I don't really know what to expect. I've never gone there. I've never played this particular event. But at the same time, that comfort of knowing I'm going to know some of the people, though, who are going with me.
Yeah. But also, it doesn't scare me so much that I don't, the unknown doesn't scare me like it used to. It's an adventure. If you change your perspective, I'm going on a freaking adventure and I am psyched.
Well, and let's face it, you know, you mentioned some of the observations that you make that lead to some of the songwriting that you do. This is literally a whole new world of observations. Now you're going to go see a totally different country, a totally different culture. You're going to see different music venues, and there will be writers that you don't know that you'll get a whole notebook full of ideas from.
Absolutely. And just relationships. You know, I mean, Nashville is a business, is an industry of relationships. So it's important to, like, nurture them.
Okay, and then, as I mentioned in the intro, also under the Nashville Nights banner, you're going to travel back home to your home country to perform in Australia. I'm sure that will be special for you for obvious reasons. But as much as I do want you to talk about that event down there, is this a rare appearance back home for you, or do you in fact get back there from time to time, even though it is such a long trip?
So I've only in 22 years of being in Nashville, I've only been flown back 3 times for the actual music stuff.
Wow.
But always back for the family, obviously. So, gosh, I went back for something called CMC Rocks about 6 years ago. I played around with Thomas Rhett, Luke Combs, and Australia's biggest country act, Troy Cassidaly. We played to 6,000 people in a round.
Wow.
Yeah, it was so cool. So, and Aussie crowds, good God, they're so rowdy. They're so fun. So, yeah, just really excited.
So this is in October. What part of Australia will this Nashville Nights event be in versus where in Australia are you from?
Well, that's the fun part of this story. It's about an hour from my hometown. Yeah, it's far north Queensland.
Okay, okay. Wow, wow. Fantastic.
Yeah, so I got a whole bunch of friends, cousins, uncles, aunties, locals.
Yeah.
It's going to be a wild time.
Yeah, outstanding.
You should come.
Outstanding. I would love that. I would love that. I am joined today on location in Nashville by singer, songwriter, producer Kylie Sackley. Find her on Facebook and on Instagram and keep up with her online for news as well as information on where and when you can go see her perform live. You heard her talk about this coming September in Denmark. Check out nnisf.org, which stands for Nashville Nights International Songwriters Festival. nnisf.org. By the way, it has been a little bit, but Kylie does have some music posted on SoundCloud, which is one of the platforms that this show is available on. You heard me mentioning that I will be speaking at the event in Miami next month. If you have been listening to the show for a while, thank you, of course, and you know that I present at a lot of different events. Already this year, I have spoken at PodFest Multimedia Expo, the San Francisco Writers Conference, and the Las Vegas Writers Conference. If you would like to have me speak at an event that you are part of, check out speakerbrucew.com. There is a video on there as well as a list of events and locations where I've spoken. And obviously, you can make contact through there to start a conversation about the event, date, location, details, etc. Again, that is speakerbrucew.com. I would love the opportunity to be a part of whatever you or someone you know might be planning. Kylie, while we were talking about some international trips that you'll be doing for live performances, you actually had a harrowing experience during flight as you and a bunch of Nashville songwriters and media types were trying to return home and actually got rerouted because of what happened. Explain to the audience what I'm referring to.
Okay, so we're talking about this might have been 04, 05 maybe. I was on a trip to Anguilla in the British West Indies, and our plane, essentially on the return flight, had an engine fire over the middle of the Caribbean, and he had to float us from a runway from 35,000 feet. He just had to hit float, and thank goodness Puerto Rico was where it was. And on this plane was Nashville royalty, Stormy Warren, Scotty Emrick, Jeff Steele, Bob DePiro again, Chuck Cannon. Gosh, so many. Again, another place I just really shouldn't have been. I'm pretty certain of it. But yeah, so basically the flight attendant came over, speaker. I thought this was poor bedside manner, but she was like, ladies and gentlemen, I don't want you to panic, but the captain smells smoke on the plane.
And I don't mean cigarettes.
And they don't mean cigarettes. Thankfully, it was the craziest experience of my life, because everything you see with chaos and franticness, this plane was dead silent. People were doing Hail Marys, praying in their chairs, but nobody was freaking out, and which was kind of a great thing, because I was like, well, it can't be that bad, right? Turns out it was like a 1 in 10 million shot that we were going to survive that flight.
So people weren't running to try to look out the window and see if they could see.
No.
Wow.
No, I don't know that they knew where the engine fire was.
Wow.
I mean, we touched down. It was a really rocky touchdown, and it was the whole deal. Fire trucks, people in silver suits running on the plane, telling us to get off, leave everything, which thank God none of us did, because passports, et cetera.
Yeah, guitars.
passports, guitars, all the important stuff.
Yeah, let's prioritize here.
And then we were kind of stranded in Puerto Rico for a second until Mary Loving, who's a very beloved travel agent in Nashville. She's literally 5'2" and she is a bulldog. And she walked up to that counter and was like, "You're getting us all home tonight."
Wow.
Also, the Nelson twins. Nelson twins were on this flight, right? Wow. So like, well, God, it was like, is this the curse? Like, it was a really bizarre experience. I haven't thought about that in ages.
Let's dig into more songwriting talk. When you have the kind of success that you've had, lots and lots and lots of other people want to write with you. That being said, as much as you have accomplished, I'm hoping that you would agree that you still don't know what you might be missing when you pass something up. How do you walk that line between, hey, look, my time is limited, I just can't write with anyone and everyone, versus taking a chance on writing with someone you've never met before for the first time and maybe seeing where it might lead?
For me, it's doing the research on them. Do I vibe with their voice, their style? And also, when I meet them, do I vibe with them as a human? Because the process of songwriting is so intimate and vulnerable if you're really leaning into it, that I don't want to sit in a room with someone that we are just not, you know, connected in that way. I think it's really important to always keep new people on your calendar, because Kelsey Ballerini, I mean, she's been in Nashville for 10 years. She was a newbie. You know, you got to get in on the ground floor with a lot of people. And I think it's just a personal preference of balancing the people you know you love riding with and being open to trying new things. And it helps if they have a camp or a publisher going, hey, you know, we really think you would add to her sound or his sound. And it's sort of an instinct thing, I think, at this point for me.
Yeah, because I got to believe that when Kylie Sackley is in a writer's round, you're going to get someone at the end of it that's going to go, hey, we should write together sometime, which, you know, everybody says that here. But they really mean it, because they know Kylie's resume and they're like, boy, I'd really like to write with her. And that is a case where you nod and smile and you go, yeah. And it sounds to me like what you're saying, and I'm putting this in the form of a question, yeah, is if you felt pretty good about them on stage, then maybe when they do contact you, right, like you're not going to say, yeah, how about tomorrow? You're going to kind of do a little background checking in the meantime. Does anybody know who that was that was up there with me the other night? Because, you know, they want to write with me and I liked him. I liked her, you know, but...
Yeah. It's a different thing if you're on stage seeing them firsthand, because I feel pretty confident after a round. If there's someone I haven't known of and they just get up there and swag it and make it their own and are interesting, I have no problem going, let's write a song.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Like if it interests me, that's what it's about. But if it's someone reaching out through a DM or something like that,
yeah,
or just, you know, maybe a random person in the crowd walking up going, I'm a writer, we should write. You have to have boundaries with that.
Yeah.
You
yeah,
just do.
Yeah.
I wouldn't necessarily be like, oh no, anything like that. I would just be like, you know what? Maybe sometime. Yeah. We'll, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. And to those in the audience that might fit that latter description where you're just dropping into someone's DMs, cold calling, my advice would be find out who they know that might put in a good word for you. That way you're not dropping in with a cold DM and Kylie's going, I have no idea who this person is. So if the other person says, hey, you should write with my friend so-and-so, well, now Kylie already knows that person and is like, yeah, well, tell me more.
Absolutely.
As opposed to, mm-hmm, you know, I don't know who you are.
Yeah. Thanks. And definitely because there are a lot of writers I trust in town. And if they bring the person to me and they're like, I really think this kid could be something, I want to be open to that forever and ever.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. I like that. Back in the intro, I made a reference to being your own publisher. So many songwriters long to get a pub deal. What made you decide, no, you know what? I'm just going to be my own publisher.
It's a very different world with streaming. Songwriters make 0.000026 of a cent per stream. And then they break that up between the three writers. So you can imagine you have to get a crap ton of streams to make any kind of money. A publisher's going to take, you know, a large majority of the money you are making from streams. It's going to go back into recouping you. So publishers basically pay you your own money and you have to make it back for them before you see stuff. So I got to a point, I've been here 22 years. I still have so much to learn and will forever be a student of this biz. But I just thought it was time to try something new. And I think
you were in one or more pub deals, I'm assuming.
Oh, I've had five. I've had five over the years. And it's just not working for writers to have a pub deal and make any money off it. So I was like, but what if I own the whole shebang? And yes, it's very risky. But as you mentioned, I had a song with Cooper Allen that went number one on the highway. I think he streamed actually over like 40 million. Like it's pretty insane. It was my first cut as my own publisher. And it made a publishing deal. And I was like, but I own everything else I wrote this year. And like, we've been working so hard and there's so many songs with so many wonderful artists. So yeah, it's a risk, but I think I'm ready to bet on myself for the first time in my damn life.
Mm. Outstanding. Outstanding. Good for you.
Thank you.
Good for you. One wild card in all of this is that you're a mom.
I'm a stepmom.
Do you feel that you have found a system, a schedule, a workflow that allows you to do what you want and need in your music career? Or is it in fact challenging and one of those, I'm not going to lie, Bruce, I wouldn't trade being a stepmom for anything, but there are times when it gets really tricky trying to juggle that with what comes with being full-time in this industry.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I've only been in this role for the last year, so we're still in the early days of finding our flow, learning each other. I'm so excited to learn this little girl. She's so brilliant and hilarious.
She's
and
how old?
Smart. She's 13. Her name's Ruby. But she also gives me a reason to say no to some things because I'm not great at it. I'm not great at saying no, and I push myself to the point of complete overwhelm and exhaustion because I am a freaking go-getter. And she gives me permission to go, no, it's okay to be home by 3:30 and not be in the studio all night and spend time with this little ray of sunshine. And it's also like readjusted my priorities in the biggest way, just of what is important, what isn't important, where to spend my time, where not to spend my time. She's been nothing but a blessing.
Mm.
Yeah.
And probably... And on the surface, this might sound strange, but I know you get where I'm coming from. But she probably provides a whole new source of inspiration for songwriting.
She really does.
In more ways than one.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. I mean, 13, she's like a really chill 13-year-old. I tell people 13 and they're like, oh, God, how you doing? I'm like, she's my buddy. Like, we're great, you know? So, I don't know. The whole thing's just... I think I'm a better writer. I think I'm a better human. I think I'm more intentional because this girl is in my life.
We're recording this on a Wednesday. This past Saturday morning, I had brunch with my wife and my stepdaughter. And in that role as a stepdad, I sat there and I thought to myself exactly what you just said. I thought, it turns out that it's okay to just go to a nice place and have a Saturday brunch and not work 24/7. At 11:30 on a Saturday morning. Like, it's okay. The world isn't ending and I'm having a really nice time.
It's okay to not achieve all the time. I'm currently in PT because I have 3 herniated discs in my back. It's all good.
Oh,
you know what? I'm not about the problems. I'm about solutions and we're moving in the direction of solutions.
But speaking of PT though, because for some reason I'm thinking about posture and having the guitar and carrying it. At what point did you learn guitar and was it self-taught? Where did that fit into all the, I was winning contests in Australia, I was songwriting, I'm moving to Nashville. At some point you had to learn how to play the guitar.
Yeah. So my dad has always played the guitar, loves, his brother is in a country band back in Australia in our little hometown. So dad has always loved to play guitar. So it was always around the house. Now, I mean, really, his specialty is Streets of London, and then he runs out of songs. But, but it was enough, you know, to sit down with Dad and have him show me some things. And then I did take a handful of guitar lessons just to get the basics of, like, where the chords are. All you need is 3 chords, and I was off to the races. So that was probably around 13, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. People are going to try looking you up on Spotify and they're going to say, where is music she recorded? Now, this is something I said early on that we would come back to. I remember having a similar conversation with our mutual friend, Blue Foley. Was there a point in your career when you made a conscious decision that I just want to focus on songwriting and not be an artist?
Yes. 2003, I wrote in Nashville. I was trying to write for my artist project. The spotlight to that level has never really felt like something I seeked. I think I pretended I wanted it because the accolades and the, you know, I felt worthy and all those things. But I learned really quickly with all these publishing houses up and down Music Row that people do this full time. It is a full blown career. I can wear my yoga pants to work every day. Never have to go on radio tour. And at the end of the day, songwriting is my number one. Obviously, if I could never sing again, it would break my heart. But if I could never write, if I could never get this out, this gift and my desire to reach people and make them feel less alone, that would be the true travesty.
And I feel like if you had stayed in Australia, you might not understand and learn the way you can on Music Row that, oh, you can just write for a living because it just seems like you're supposed to be an artist. So that's what you were following, especially at that age. I guess I have to go be an artist.
Yeah.
You come here and you get the opportunity to see that, no, people actually make a living just being a songwriter.
Like a really great living. And they can go home to their families. They can take vacations. They're not playing on every holiday. God bless artists. That's all I have to say about that. I am so thankful that they are out there doing the hard yards and wanting that. After the first year in Nash, I was like, do I want this artist thing? I really don't think I do. And I'd gotten a publishing deal and it was working. It wasn't a hard shift for me. There wasn't like some death of ego. I was like, I'm doing my number one passion. Let's go.
Yeah. And I love that you brought up, I don't think that the general audience, the casual music listener, really gives enough credence to all that time on the road. Last week, my interview with Brandon Bing, he pulled out the number that, you know, Lainey probably do 200 dates in a year. And as he said that, I remember during the interview thinking to myself, no, probably more than that, probably more than 200. And that is something to very much consider when you say, I really want to be an artist. Really? You're okay with being 200 plus dates a year on the road?
And some people are born for it and love it. But yeah, I'm a homebody. I'm an introvert. Even going to music events exhausts the shit out of me.
But tell me this, for the people that are listening that are saying, I like this Kylie, I want to see her. When the next time I'm in Nashville, I want to go. Do you do a lot of writer's nights or not really?
I wouldn't say a ton in town, but yeah, I play the listening room, the Bluebird. It's sporadic. I always post it to my socials so people know when I am playing in town. But a lot of my bread and butter performing is out of town.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I've referred to you as a singer, songwriter, and producer. Tell us about wearing that last hat as a producer, meaning how much or how little producing you do, and if you're open for business for people who might want to contact you to produce them or no.
No. So I'm not like that. I'm not a track girl. I really thrive in vocal production land. So I'm really good with the artists in the room, getting them in the right pocket. I literally just left a co-write where I was like, okay, girl, you're doing this. I need you to just swag it a little bit this way, lay behind the beat. So yes, vocal production for sure. But I've always heard stuff. As a writer, I don't know how you can't. I mean, I hear bass lines. When I was 22, I was in Sound Emporium telling all the musos, the biggest musos in town, I'm like, no, but I'm hearing this bass line. Can we try that?
Wow.
So, you know, anyone's a producer, you know, if you're... John Rich said to me years ago, you know, what makes you a producer? Calling yourself a producer. And it is. We produce songs. I mean, we're from the ground up, you know. But yeah, I definitely think my specialty is more in the vocal side of things.
And,
yeah.
And the next day you went to Kinko's and got business cards printed up that say producer on it.
Yeah.
You're a producer? Yes, it says so on my business card.
Yeah. Side note, I remembered the PT thing I was going to tell you.
Great, great.
So my physical therapist, because we were talking about it's okay to not achieve all the time. So I went to my first physical therapy appointment and I was like, oh, Adam, I love a gold star. And I could see his wheels turning. So yesterday I went to him and he goes, okay, you're giving me 120. I need you to give me like 70 or 80. And he's like, I give you permission to not overachieve today.
Wow.
My physical therapist said that, like, he's brilliant. And I say that because that hit me and I think it will hit other people. If you're hard on yourself, if you're incredibly self-critical, if you feel like you're never doing enough and this town will make you feel like that, you know, it's okay. You have permission to not be 150% every damn day.
But I'm glad that you're saying this because I'm remembering it was in the context of me saying that I went to brunch.
Exactly.
And I am someone that works 24/7. And I think you're saying that it fits into both, I want to give 150% of myself though. And it also fits into, I want to be a workaholic and I just want to always be working. And he's saying, I'm giving you permission to go to brunch, Bruce. I'm giving you permission, Kylie, to come into physical therapy today and not feel like you have to impress the daylights out of me.
Exactly. And that's all balance, you know?
And I take my hat off to him because that's a great example. That's a field where you are usually getting someone that's like, I really need you to do this for me today and I need you to go home and do all these things at home. It's like,
yeah.
This guy's... So to me, that's somebody who was dropped in front of you for a much bigger reason than your back.
Amen.
Yeah, for mental reasons, for sharing with us, for sharing with the audience. Someone's going to hear it and they're going to go, they're talking about me. Which, you know, now we've come full circle, right?
Right.
The songs that you write, they're talking about me. And so many guests, as you can imagine, come on this show and say, I write songs because I want to make people feel something. Mm-hmm. And you're doing it with the advice you just gave, but you're obviously doing it with the massive catalog of songs that you've had.
Well, thank you. I mean, it's all about human connection at the end of the day. And I'm so freaking grateful I get to do it by way of song.
Before we start to wrap up, I wonder, all these amazing cuts that you've had, is there one that stands out to you for a reason that's not a canned answer? It's not an obvious, you know, well, because it was my first one, or, oh, because it went to such and such chart position. Is there one that may, and I don't want to say perhaps this or perhaps this, because I want to see if something is just going to come to you naturally. Maybe one of those artists I read off at the beginning or someone else.
Like a favorite from that? Like a,
not so much a favorite, but maybe it was, you know, gosh, I actually remember when we wrote that song that I thought we laid an egg and the thing went, you know, or, you know, such and such a song. I was home in Australia and I got the call right in front of my parents. Anything like that, that one of those stands out for a really unique reason?
I mean, you brought up Australia. That's so interesting because talking 10 years ago, before I'd learned a little more about balance, I would get back to Australia so exhausted that I didn't want to think about writing a song. Mm. You know, Dad wanted to pick up the guitar and I was like, oh God, wow. Can we just like wow. go fishing? And I had one song idea on that 6-week trip and I wrote it down in my phone and it was, I actually wrote down, I don't get high anymore. I had a write when I got back from Australia with Clint Daniels and Jeff Hyde. Jeff Hyde plays for Eric Church, two incredible writers. And I said, I got one idea while I was in Australia. And I said, it's, I don't get high anymore. And the boys were like, what if it's, she don't get high anymore? Mm. And it was an Alan Jackson cut. It's one of my proudest moments. This song, just top to toe, felt like a masterpiece. And, you know, one freaking idea in 6 weeks, write everything down. If I can tell anyone anything, even if it's the crappiest idea you think of, if there's something in the bones of it, write it down. Edit later.
It moved you to think of it, so why wouldn't you put it in your phone? Why wouldn't you jot it down somewhere? You felt strong enough about it at the time to say, is this anything? It could be. It's not going to be anything if you forget it and leave it by the side of the road.
Exactly. And I cannot tell you how many ideas I've had in the middle of the night where I'm like, I've got to roll over and write that down, and I haven't. And I'm...
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
So just if I can give anyone a little bit of advice, it is write it all down.
Awesome. We're going to close with a Walker Hayes song called You Broke Up With Me, which Kylie was a writer on. Before I let you go and we play that song, share with us first, Kylie, all about this one, if you would, please.
Oh, yeah. So I had Walker and Thomas Archer, two incredible writers, on the calendar. It was a double on a Friday. So I had an 11 a.m. that had already written a whole nother song with another artist. And of course, by Friday, you're like, oh God, why did I do this to myself? So we wrote at like 4 p.m. In Walker's little shack behind Rare Spark, where he used to have his little, it was like a garden shed. I didn't even think it had ventilation. But, and we walked in and Walker was like, we sort of threw some titles and Walker was like, I've got this title, You Broke Up With Me. And Thomas Archer and I both looked at each other and we were like, let's do that. And Walker's so swaggy. I mean, he's not the typical write. He's very in the zone with whatever he's doing. You can actually hear me and Thomas speaking in the intro of that song. They left it in from the recording of the day.
Wow.
Where it goes da 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 and I'm going, yeah, all of that, yeah, in the background. I mean, we got in there and we started swagging it, and Walker is so incredible for that, for the internal rhymes and the trickery and the wordplay. I learned a lot from him about go for the weird words, for the weird pictures. Mm. Like chase that color. And then we pretty much had written half of it. And the boys got back together on another day and their third fell off, and they decided to sort of finish it out and sent me the demo, and I was like, well, shit. And then I heard nothing more about it. I mean, Walker was brand new. He'd signed to Monument. I was catching up with a songwriter friend. He was involved in that camp. And I said, yeah, I think I got a Walker cut. And he goes, what song is it? And I said, you broke up with me? And he goes, dude, it's the first single. It's going to radio. Wow. Like, and, which is the best way. Leave me in the dark and let me find out last minute versus it's been on hold for 2 years. And, oh, it's definitely going to be a single. And then they yank it out from under you. So that's how I found out. Oh, and I mean, so it cool. just went from there, but, they're both so incredibly talented, and it's such a fun song to play. I'm going to play it in Denmark and Australia and everywhere else.
Such a great story, a great way to end. Wonderful to meet you. Thank you so much for making time to be here on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much for having me. You're awesome, Bruce.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much. And audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to singer, songwriter, vocal producer, Kylie Sackley. Again, do connect with her on Facebook and Instagram. For that matter, tell her that you heard her on Now Hear This Entertainment. As I mentioned earlier, she does have some music on SoundCloud, which is one of the many platforms that this show is available on. Keep up with Kylie for news as well as information on where and when you can go see her perform live. You heard her talk today about this coming September in Denmark and then the next month in Australia. As I mentioned before, do check out nnisf.org, which stands for Nashville Nights International Songwriters Festival, nnisf.org. I really appreciate you tuning in to the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you're still with us at the end of the episode, I'm guessing you're enjoying what you're hearing, so thank you for sticking around. If you would like to show your appreciation for the work I put into making this show happen week after week, year after year, 11 years with no breaks, I've got an easy way for you to do so. Head over to nhte.net, where you will spot a bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. It's not a sponsor. There's no brand behind it. It is simply a way for you to send a little support my way with a personal message that I will see. Alternatively, you can go directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. Your support means the world to me, and I thank you in advance. That's going to do it for episode 583. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with a Walker Hayes song that Kylie was a writer on. This is the one she just talked about. It's called You Broke Up With Me.
Got some coke in my bourbon, surfing a room like Swayze. No, I ain't drunk, I'm amazing. Yeah, I got that lay way, way back, back in my swagger, X Factor, feeling no pain. I'm at the top of my game. Darling, you can't crash my party with your sorries and what always don't start raining on my Mardi Gras parade for a minute. I ain't even fixing to listen to your guilt tripping. You're forgetting, girl, you made your bed and didn't want me in it. Whoa, girl, simmer on down a notch. Ain't nobody making you watch me get my focus you on. No, girl, can't touch my good as gold. I know it's difficult to see me on a roll. But hey, you broke up with me. Yeah, what can I say, babe? Guess you don't know what you want till you see you moving on. Making lonely look like freedom, baby. Don't even act like I'm doing something wrong. If my song comes on and I get lost on that dance floor, it's somebody's arms that ain't yours. You can't crash my party with your sorrows and what always don't be raining on my Mardi Gras parade for a minute. I ain't even fixing to listen to your guilt tripping. You're forgetting, girl, you made your bed and didn't want me in it. Whoa, girl, simmer on down a notch. Ain't nobody making you watch me get my focus you on. No, girl, can't. I say, babe, you broke up with me. For real, babe, ain't trying to rub it in your face. I'm just breaking off a little cold hard truth. It is what it is, girl. You did what you did, girl. I'm just doing what a bachelor do. Darling, you can't crash my party with your sorries and what always. Don't be raining on my Mardi Gras parade for a minute. I ain't even fixing to listen to your guilt tripping. You're forgetting, girl, you made your bed and didn't want me in it. Whoa, girl, simmer on down a notch. Ain't nobody making you watch me get my focus. With me, yeah, what can I say, babe? You broke up with me.